Okay, welcome back. We're speaking with Kathleen Wythe, author of Skids, and we're going to do a reading from the book. So, Kathleen, maybe you can tell us what you're going to be reading, and if you want to segue this reading, feel free to do so.
Okay, great. This story is called Recover, and I also just wanted to say that partial proceeds of Skids goes to Covenant House Vancouver. They've got a really great program. They've got emergency crisis vets, but they've also got a great program where street kids can live there for a year and get their life together regarding, you know, if they want to go back to school or get a job, they live in an apartment and learn how to budget, life skills, you know, get their lives back together. So it's called Recover. I first met Saraya the night she moved into Westminster House, and I instantly hated her. She was all fucked up and just coming off junk, and she wanted to go down to talk to Alice, the house counselor. If Alice wasn't busy downstairs, that meant the chick was going to go down in the office, and then that meant Alice would have something to do, and then my plan for her to come up and play poker with me was screwed. I always wanted her to come and play cards, you know, with me, because then it felt like she was my mom. I mean, not like my real mom, you know, who's still standing on each casing. Can you believe it? She's like 45 and everything and still hooking, buying her cheap Acme clothes at the Mall Express on Hastings. I know, how embarrassing, eh? But she'll do whatever for the smack, and fuck it, I've done crazy shit too. Anything to bow down to the H Queen. Except now, I'm hiding from the Queen in this recovery house, and I hope she doesn't find me. Saraya, she looked like she was pretty jonesing. I hated the memory of that feeling, that's for sure. All the other girls had gone out, and here was just me at the house, waiting around, hanging out with the counselor. Yeah, I know it sounds sucky. It's not that I didn't want to go out with the other girls, I did. But I wanted to get better first and fast. And the only way I could think of to do that was to hang out with a counselor. You know, kind of like hanging out with a teacher when you're little after school. Just talking with someone older, maybe wiser. I didn't know then that getting better took a long time, and some drug counselors weren't much better off in that department than me. So Saraya, she came back up the basement stairs and sat next to me on the couch in the living room. Her foot was going 40 miles an hour. Alice is on the phone, she said. I nodded, smoked my smoke coolly. How long you been in here, she asked. A couple of months, I said. Then she said something weird that I thought only I'd admit to. She goes, wish I was still in here new-like. Her eyes sort of glazed, and I thought she was going to bawl right there and then, but she held it together. She pulled out a Player's and lit it. I've been out for 3 weeks. Didn't take long to scrape bottom again. What's your name? Jessie. Saraya, like the Egyptian city. I was scared of the girls who were returns. It was like they had some kind of rounder disease, and if I listened too much to them, I'd be back out using again. Just like when I was in detox, and I was too scared of making friends with anyone. Now, druggies scare me, even though I wouldn't look that twice on Hastings when I was out using. They'll fuck you over, that's for sure, even when you're not looking, but then again, there was some kind of family, too. It's hard to give up family when you're a skid. Even an older skid. My eyes wander over the new scabs on Saraya's hands and arms. Then my mind turns to the John I was blowing last summer who took out his fit, shot up in his cock. I can't think about it. It fucks me up bad. But Saraya, she was different. She didn't have the kind of skid background most of us did at the recovery house. She was doing real good. She got off the street and was having kids even. But then she started growing these weird cysts on her ovaries. She'd gone into hospital to have a hysterectomy, and they pulled everything out. Then, even though she told them she was an addict, like you know how you have to say, they smiled, patted her, gave her more morphine. Then they just discharged her. Even her doctor was a recovering alcoholic who should know better, go figure. So then she has this addiction raging in her, like they teach us in here, it never goes away. Like it's always slouching to Bethlehem, just like those poetry books say. So she took off for the flats in Surrey and was strung out, looking some long-haired junkie in a mud puddle. So she remembered she had Westminster House. She'd been there before, and she knew she could go again and get her shit together. They took away her kids, though. She left them at the babysitter's while she was in hospital, had promised to be back, but she was strung out for a month. That was Sunday in spring, she said. The day I met her was a Tuesday in June. I can still see the bruises inside the crypts of her arms. But after she moved in, me and Saraya became major eating buddies. Nights were free to go to NA meetings, visit kids or boyfriends, and since Saraya could only see her kids once a month at the foster mom's in Surrey, and social services had adopted my kid away 2 years ago, on weekends, We had nobody to go see. So we'd walk the side alley to the corner store to get pick-out stuff. That store made huge business off us chocolate-craving recovering addicts. The Chinese lady smiled, said hello, put licorice in our bags before we'd even ask for it. She even knew our brand of smokes and never treated us as shitty like we were some group home rats, the way the Night and Day restaurant did. On the way back, me and Saraya would eat sweet tarts. I get this eerie feeling like I was walking with Nefertiti and Cleopatra, all mixed up into one exotic woman breed. She was a hooker, primed her walk years before. Her eyes would light up like two hematite jewels when she lit her smoke in the alley. And I'd make pretend we were runaways, but this time we were only 10, and our new foster parents kissed and hugged and stuffed in front of us, and no one screamed or smashed beer bottles and ate them. And we spent all day and night in our rooms reading Sweet Valley High and finishing our school projects on Egypt. Saraya, she played along for a while. Down that alleyway, it was like we were so pure. And I wanted always to be pure, just innocent, right? And not aware of touch or pain or needles. But then Saraya, she'd blow it by talking about her boyfriend or her kids or her mom and money and bills. And I was 18 years old again, just some old recovering addict skid, trying to steal back my dreams. Back at the house, we watched TV and talked and talked. Because, you know, the counselors told us that that was how we were going to get better. That was how to get honest. And we were so brutally honest with ourselves. I told Saraya things that I never told anyone, even made up things so she'd think I was cool. Really, I was kind of an addict virgin compared to her. She was 10 years older, two kids and 10 years of using wiser. Once, she told me about the first summer she'd run away when she was 14 with her brother Steve, and how Steve hadn't raped her, but her stepbrother had, and how Steve got addicted to H and then shot his head off at the Newton Inn. How she'd collected wildflowers with him in the fields, swam down the canal in the middle of the town on Salt Spring Island, and how they played free birds for him at his funeral. There was always so much pain in that house, and I didn't know how to get away from it. I didn't know what I knew now, that I was supposed to hear all the shit over and over again by all kinds of women, so I'd remember, so I'd record it to save myself and speak for the ones who didn't make it. Last July, Alice was getting all of us tired by making us do summer cleaning. Also, the government agency that ran the place said we couldn't smoke in the group home anymore. Alice thought that was great because she was always bugging us about how we lit up when somebody was doing their fourth step. Whatever. I needed my coffin nails. It was hard to quit because the smokes got me through insomnia some nights. I remember because that was around the time that Jenny came into the house. She was a true rounder and double, no triple zeros all the way. She'd been in and out of a lot of them. Aurora House, New Dawn, Turning Point, Last Door for Women. This was the third time she'd been through Westminster House. Last time, after a week here, she went down to the SkyTrain station to score. New West was kind of hard for us all that way. Lots of junkies, even potheads smoking up by the Atlanta Club, where we had to go for our AA meetings. It was like in your stinking face. Jenny's the one I think about when I see the old druggy movies they make us watch here, like Train Spotting, or think about how fucked up Kate Moss is. Jenny was from the backwoods kids, like from up north and shit, trying to get it together in the city, but she never could, and she'd been a foster kid all her life. She couldn't have any more strikes against her than that. Those foster homes will kill your fucking soul, don't I know? She also had a wicked disease, alcoholism, druggy, boozer. She drove me nuts in the house because she was so off the wall, kind of crackhead mushed. She wanted so bad to learn how to play Hotel California on the guitar. She kind of had a crush on Sarah, and she was telling everybody that men were the Satans of the earth, and she was only going to get her loving from women now. She'd ask Sarah over and over again, what's this chord? And how do you get it to riff this way at the beginning? But Sarah, she would just ignore her because Sarah had this big dykey girlfriend called Kelly who was still using, wasn't allowed to come to the house. And Sarah was all heartbroken about it, trying to get Kelly into the program. So Jenny just kept playing the same thing over and over again until we were practically screaming from the boredom of it. Until one morning I got up and didn't hear it. I went down to help Alice make breakfast, and I didn't ask, and she didn't say anything. I guess we didn't want it to be true. We never heard Jenny's voice again. She'd left that morning, gone that quick, and overdosed on heroin in the downstairs washroom, the Columbia Hotel. She didn't have any relatives who wanted to come to the Salvation Army funeral, so it was all of us girls from the house and some of her street friends, too. They played Hotel California at the funeral. Leah was there, too, all junked up and skinny. But at least she came back to the house with us after Jenny's funeral, and she's cleaned up. She's got a baby now and a boyfriend living with her who, well, he's kind of all right, and she's clean. So I guess Jenny's death wasn't all for nothing. Jenny died about the time that I had 3 months in the program. By then, I'd learned more about drugs than I'd never known on the street, because on the street, I was always a nodder skid. Heroin was my drug of choice, and I never went looking for any other idol. But it wasn't until I was in recovery that I learned if you didn't get any heroin or coke, you could get Tolman and Rillin from your local drug dealing doctor and get 5 more to double doctor for Furanol. This I knew. And then you'd crush the T's and R's up together and cook them like junk and shoot them. Only problem is the pills are cut with chalk, your veins get all clogged up, and like Dawn, you'd get all these bruises and lumps all over your skin, and then you'd be dead. Dawn left Westminster House one night, too. Too late. I think her boyfriend picked her up. They drove the half hour it took to get to downtown Vancouver, shot up together, and died. Like they got some of that too pure stuff going around. What did they talk about in the car? I've always wondered. Like, what do you talk about when you're going to die and you don't know it? Why do I have to think about all these girls? Alice says, if you don't know what's going on out there, Jesse, you're right back out there. And Soraya gets in on me like that, too, in groups. Because she's been around so long, right? Saying shit like, you got to get it into your head every morning. You're going to die if you don't remember. If you don't run this shit through your head like some fucked up horror movie that you never want to be in again, it's going to be you out there. All those dead girls, I can see their sleepy faces at the breakfast table. The way their mouths were aching after they come back from the free dentist. The times we sat up late and the TV's on, but we're smoking and talking about those times we were kids jumping into Cultus Lake, or we went camping with our welfare vacation money, or, you know, some foster kid program where they got you out of in the tents for a week in the summer. Soraya was telling me some hooker story, and then Alice came into the group room where we were listening to some old Nine Inch Nails songs. I was feeling down, sure, it's heavy shit to listen to, but Alice thought we were working ourselves up into using just listening to that. I thought it was silly, but I couldn't tell her. This is Alice, you know, house counselor. She's a high arch goddess type who sat in group and word whipped us for all our sins using the AA big books. Only sometimes, me and Soraya had this thing, like we had to dance or exercise real hard, jump up and down lots of times, just because we had all this evil energy, like, and the street stank all over us. After Soraya told me about the East Hastings thing, I told her my mom worked East Hastings, sometimes over on Powell Street. I never told that to anyone. I started to cry, but only a bit, because I pushed my fingers in the sides of my eyes, and that made it stop. Soraya said, I thought you looked like someone I knew. What's your mom's name? Well, for the last couple of years, it was Sylvia, but she used Sherry, too. Yeah, I know her, Soraya said. She's good people. That's usually what people say about a hooker who doesn't steal your H when you're on the nod, or who babysits you, helps you kick ass on a freak trick. Right then, I missed my mom. I wanted her here with me. Me and my mom, we weren't all that abnormal. Sometimes, we'd go to her steady tricks house, Bill's, you know, and watch old movies like Pretty Woman and share Kleenex and popcorn. Bill was cool, too, because he wasn't a skinner and wouldn't mess with me, because he wasn't into baby memes. I miss those times when she'd get it together for a few months. We'd have an apartment on Fraser Street. She'd try to use the welfare checks good and get the welfare people to send the rent right to the landlord so she didn't use it up. We'd go to Super Value, use our green sheets, get lots of good food, like some roasted chicken or real bread and butter. It would only last a few months, and then I'd be in foster care or off to some emergency shelter. She'd be downtown again. I lasted a long time before I ran away. I lasted till I was about 12, and then I couldn't stand being smothered in foster care where the dad most likely would do you anyway. Might as well get paid for it. Being a skid with your mom on the street, well, she's more like your sister, really. I miss her. But sometimes it's like I was the mom and she was the kid. So one morning in group, Soraya threw the AA book in the middle of the room and screamed that she didn't fucking believe a word of it. I wanted that to be me because I knew it was something that Alice thought was kind of real, you know, like questioning what we were learning. But then Soraya had dark Egyptian hair and she was really feisty, and Alice maybe kind of expected it from her. I was too scared that people didn't like what I did, or if I didn't behave, then I'd be bad, like all the foster homes I'd been in as a kid. The super good kid, okay, yeah, smoking up and using. But, you know, I'd try and help the foster mom clean up the dishes, wish she'd love me as much as her real kids. I know this sounds lesbo, And so maybe it isn't so what, but sometimes I'd wish for a foster home where the mom was single, and then I could sleep with her. And then, like, she could stroke my hair and tell me I was a good kid. She'd rub my back, and I'd be pure and not all dirty from my real mom's tricks. I honestly didn't let them touch me until I was at least 8. Mom made sure of that, too, even though she could have used the extra money. And since I got my period when I was 9, well, that made me a woman then, didn't it? So yesterday, I ended up in Alice's office. I don't feel you've hit your bottom, Jesse. It seems you're disconnected in group. I guess I just feel better. What about Jenny? So she's dead. Tons of skids are. Yeah, it's fucked up, but what can I do about it? Brian's dead, so is Mary. And Kevin's got the virus now, too, still fucking using ice. So what the fuck? I pressed my fingers at the side of my eyes and thought, I don't want to cry, not now. Alice rolled her chair closer to me. I could feel her breath on my neck as she moved to hug me. I stayed stiff because the bitch was trying to make me cry more, and I hate crying. I pushed her away, but it just backed off. You need to feel these things in order to deal with them, Jesse. Fuck off. And then I was crying. I could feel my face was all flushed. Alice handed me a box of Kleenex, and I angrily pulled a few out and threw the box on the desk. Just let it out. I don't want to let it out. You can fucking lay off. I don't want to feel sad or anything. It's fucked that those people aren't here anymore. It must be hard to lose people you love. Shut up. I hate the way all you counselors talk. You're so calm and creeping into my brain. What do you know about my bottom? I've been there. Who's in detox? Who had NG tubes 2 times in a row? Charcoal breakfast. Fuck you. I spent 3 months in psych ward because I couldn't even tell anybody my name after those fuckers on Tinder raped me. You say it, Jesse, but you're not connected with the pain. Even now, you're defensive. Why do you think you're getting mad at me instead of those people who hurt you? I grabbed another Kleenex and shut up because I just knew she was going to launch into heavy-duty therapy mode. I couldn't take it. Alice had this penetrating way of making tapeworms inch their way inside my belly. Like, I wasn't cool enough or drastic enough for her to say. She wanted the old hippie needle types like she used to be. Like, they were so old, something around 40 when they were coming in off the street. And maybe she couldn't understand that some of the skids had started earlier. So we were coming and getting clean earlier. And it wasn't all about the drugs, at least for me. I mean, I could say that to myself, even if I couldn't say it to Alice. But it's fucking hard to look at all the stealing, V&Es, the rapes, drinking, hooking, smoking up, cooking up, needles. Yeah, that was all fucked. But getting cleaned up was also about trying to find that perfect home. Like, you know, at the Clarkson, that last foster home I was in when I was still underage, they told me they understood why I stole their kids' school books, the leftovers in the fridge, and Mrs. Clarkson's undershirt that I hid in my bag and took with me every day. Okay, it was fucking weird, I know, but they got it. But even though they were nice, they'd still never be my family. Sometimes I wanted Alice to be my mom, but sometimes Alice was like something out of a movie, someone I didn't know and couldn't ever get to know. Like when she sang Amazing Grace down in the basement near the piano. I never really thought it was Alice's dead junkie's kids both that night. Saray and I slept over in the group room. And that was what we were all sad about. Why couldn't we be Alice's alive daughters? But still, we'd be there begging her to sing more Alice, sing another one. She had such a great voice. And trying to get in there and be the girl she was going to say special words to. Words like, you'll make it because you're special. Or, you have a little of God inside your eyes. How can you not want to be Alice's little girl? We saw her kid's ghost. Saraya saw her first. We had the coffee table between us. We just smoked enough smokes to raunch out the throat of even the most hardcore old rubby. Do you really think there's a God? Saraya asked me. Yeah. But kind of like an energy or something, like, you know, nature and how the crocuses come out in March, February sometimes on the coast. Saraya says, you ever wonder what you're going to say to it if it showed itself? I don't know. Like maybe, why am I here and not in some fancy college painting pictures? You want to be in college painting pictures? Well, not really, but it'd be cool, though, you know, to be talented at something. All I got now is a good street name. And some tricks say I give good head. Yeah, but not much to stick on a job application if you're quitting the life, hey? No, I say. Then maybe it was around the Diet Coke or all the candy we bought from the corner store that we weren't allowed to go into every day, but we snuck into any night, every night anyways, Maybe it was because we were both real tired from crying in group about how we missed our moms, the ones we'd made up in our heads, right? The ones that were soft and cuddly and held our heads when we were sick. But then, we saw Alice's kid's ghost rise up from behind a coffee machine. I didn't say anything at first, and neither did Soraya. It just stood there with a glint in her eye, and we somehow knew that it was Alice's kid. When we started talking, I could hear Soraya saying something from way far off place. I remember telling her to shut up. Alice's dead kid, she opened her arms and blood flowed out of her veins deep inside the crook of her elbows. She looked over at me, large black eyes. I guess she got that from Alice, because Alice, half stone Indian, has long black hair. And she just looked straight through me like a laser beam, these two black laser beams. And she said, "You are your own mother." I felt like I was falling. The couch sort of swam up around me. What was she doing here? Is this really happening? Is she God? She stood there for a long time, my eyes sometimes focused on her and sometimes not. She flicked in and out of my eyes, and I felt like I was on dust, just tripping. And who was she to tell us all this crap? And why was she telling us this? And am I going to listen? Because even though she appeared out of nowhere, she was just in my body. Maybe it's my body, having some kind of flashback. And she was saying shit that sounded like straight out of Alice's mouth. But I still thought, she's right. She's right. And then she turned and kind of wandered around the room like it was an old familiar place. When she left, she slipped out under the cupboard where the coffee filters were. Soraya came out from the back of the couch. Then she said, "That was ours, Jesse. That was our special spirit. Came to us, telling us." I just looked over at the cupboard. "Do you feel it?" "Yeah," I said. A tingly feeling went through me, and for a second I saw it all. Mom sitting on the couch beside me at Bill's place. We're watching old movies, and her eyes are filling up when Shelby dies in Steel Magnolias. Me thinking, it's just Julia Roberts, it's just a movie, and she's not really dead. But turning to Mom and watching her crying, sticking my finger out to her cheek and catching one. She's smiling, my mom, at me. She doesn't say, "I love you, Jesse," but I know it. I can see my reflection in her eyes, and she's smiling. I still want that mother. I still want my mother. Here in the house, we're all one long line of girls wanting mothers. Some days I don't even know if my real mom's alive or dead. And since I've been clean, I can't go down any space things, because maybe I'm still too shaky. Maybe Mom will quit one day, like I did. Maybe she'll learn to care for herself, like I'm learning to, like the ghost said.
That's great. Thank you very much, Kathleen.
Thank you.
That was called Recover.
Yep.
Is there anything that inspired that story specifically that you'd want to talk about?
Yeah, it's probably the truest of the stories. I mean, there is a national place called Westminster House, and I spent about, it's a recovery house where you go to after you've been to the treatment center. And I spent about a year there trying to get it together, going to group every day, doing chores. And Soraya was similar to a girl I knew there who became a really good friend of mine. And I think, you know, one of the things that Westminster House did for me was it did give me a home to get away from a lot of bad influences and friends, and to learn about how to live again. So, yeah, I just wanted to show that sometimes addicts, I mean, they need longer. They need a longer stay, and we need to be able to provide those beds for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Okay, well, and I know you wanted to give a plug for the proceeds of the book, so maybe
yes,
before I let you go, you can...
Right, the proceeds go to Covenant House Vancouver, which is, they're in Toronto as well, and a really great organization, as well as, so partial proceeds of the book are going to Covenant House, and the United Way, and also Youth Co., the center at Davie Village as well, all really great organizations that are trying to help youth come off the street and deal with their addictions here in Vancouver.
Okay, great, Kathleen. You do a great job at really personalizing a lot of the characters too. It's a great read.
Oh, great. Thanks so much.
Okay, thanks a lot for talking with me.
Okay.
Okay. Take care.
Thank you, Jeff.